Hey guys, you're listening to RJ and Austin's Mindset Matters, a podcast that explores the nuances of aspiring and successful entrepreneurs.
We're two real estate investors that quit our jobs by challenging the mindset society teaches in school and overcoming traditional limiting beliefs.
Join us each week as we dive into the mindset of an entrepreneur.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another podcast episode of RJ and Austin Mindset Matters. Today, we have an amazing guest, Ryan Stenberg, and I'm going to love hearing his story, and you guys will too. But before we jump into that, Austin, what's up, man?
What's going on, RJ? What's going on, man? Nothing new this week, to be honest. I'm putting together the final touches, getting some more numbers for that project that we're doing in Hollywood that I talked about last time. Nice. This one is going to be pretty cool. I'm adding a tiki hut in the backyard and I'm bringing in some sand. So it's going to be like a little beach oasis going on back there. Doing this thing called travertine in the backyard around the pool. Dude, travertine's so expensive, man. It's not cheap, man. It's like $10 a square foot. To like lay it and then like another four for the actual travertine. So, you know, the numbers going, going to have to pull a permit because in the city of Hollywood, they send out an inspector before you launch your Airbnb or Vrbo property to look there. So if you add like a new room or you convert a garage, everything has to be permitted. So going through that process now and, yeah.
And that's, party at Austin's afterwards. Party.
Yeah. Everyone's welcome.
Cool, cool. I mean, I've been just going through the same old stuff. Subcontractors not showing up, flip going a little slower than I expected. Same stuff, but we all push through. Pushing through is something that we are going to talk about today because you cannot be 25 years old, be financially free, and be in Ryan's position without pushing through some mental barriers or, you know, changing some of that negative mindset talk. So without further ado, I'm going to let Ryan introduce himself. Ryan, if you could tell the guest where you are today in your business and sort of how you got started.
Yeah, thanks, RJ. Happy to do that. So today, we as me and some business partners of mine do mostly kind of commercial, office, industrial, retail, syndication. I bought my first property about 3 years ago, almost to the day, actually. It was a triplex out in Cincinnati. And that was when I was kind of working a W-2 job, a 9-to-5 job, and investing on the side. So the journey's been, you know, bridging the gap between those two things since then. And so I slowly was buying more and more on the side, but it was going a lot slower than I wanted it to. So it was buy a triplex and then save, you know, for 6 months or whatever it may be, and then buy another one. And writing that out on a spreadsheet, I just realized this is going to take forever to get where I want to go. I was trying to look for a way to speed that up. And that's eventually how I ended up landing into kind of more of the business model that we use today, which is this value add commercial syndication that we've been working on for the last few years.
That is amazing. So I am in your same boat, right? But it's taken us 4 years to get where we're at. And I'm like, this is way too slow. So my mindset's pivoting now. So tell us a little bit about your business model, where you're at today, how many units you had before you made that shift, and really, what was the biggest barrier to enter your space?
Yeah, great question. I'll kind of break it into three phases and I'll work from where we're at today and then I'll work backwards. So today we focus, as I said, on like office, retail, and industrial properties. And the reason that we focus on that is that we find that there's very little competition there for people doing value add. So we buy cheap, you know, generally cheap vacant buildings without tenants in them. And we are looking to put commercial tenants in there. So these are businesses for 5-year leases, 10-year leases, and things like that. Once you do that, it stabilizes the property similar to how it does in a single family home with a renter or a multifamily apartment complex with renters. So you stabilize the building and then you sell that building off to a larger group that's looking to hold stable assets. So today we own, we've probably purchased around 20 million. I think that portfolio is worth around 45 or 50 million. And that when I say we, it's a little bit of a different partner on each deal. I'm the main sponsor on most of those along with my business partner, Abe. And then there's other partners we bring in here and there.
That's amazing. There's that financial freedom. If you guys didn't hear, that's a $25 million spread. Dude, anyway, awesome. Sorry to interrupt you there.
Quick question, Ryan. So I'm sure a lot of our listeners are going to want to know. So you guys are targeting office space. Like how is that market after COVID? I mean, there's a lot of people working remote right now. Some people are going back to the office. Did that hurt your business model during COVID, or did you start that business model during COVID or after COVID, before COVID? What did that look like?
Yeah. So we target office, retail, and industrial. We actually buy the most industrial space, which has kind of the most tailwinds behind it with e-commerce and data centers and a lot of other, you know, maybe manufacturing coming back to the US. But we do go after office too. And what we do for office, retail, and industrial is we just make sure that we're coming in at an even lower basis and even lower, you know, price per square foot relative to what we can exit at on office, because we don't know what kind of, you know, headwinds we're going to hit as we start to flip, you know, renovate the building, lease it up with tenants and whatnot. So when we do office, we make sure that, you know, if we exit according to plan, it's going to be a home run because we need a lot of room for error. And that's just to handle that uncertainty. And with industrial, we're a little bit more aggressive. So we'll buy closer to, you know, we'll buy with slightly lower margins because we're comfortable with the longevity and, you know, kind of the future of industrial property in the U.S.
Okay, cool.
That's awesome. So let's bring it back to that mindset, though. You didn't tell us about all the negative self-talk, and, you know, I'm sure your friends and family were like, you don't know what you're doing. Stop it. So tell us a little bit about that transition.
Yeah, thanks for bringing me back. So I actually remember it took me about a year and a half since I bought that first property. I think I bought one more over that time period. And I kept stalling again and again and again. And so really this journey, despite being 3 years from the first, you know, our most recent purchase, we bought $44 million worth of real estate in the last 18 months. And I bought a few hundred thousand in the first 18 months. And really there was a shift that you're talking about. And I don't know if it was overnight, but I remember a couple key moments where that happened. And early on, you know, a lot of people, we'll talk about action and, you know, trying to drive towards action and whatnot. And, you know, I didn't really find that to be the blocker or the problem. I was taking action as much as I could every single day on bus rides to and from work. So I was working in tech up in the Bay Area at the time. We had shuttles that would go to and from work. So I'd spend that hour and a half each way looking for real estate on market and trying to buy properties. But as I said earlier, it was going really slow. And in trying to accelerate that, I just kept hitting the block of not having enough time to allocate, to figure out anything creative, anything to kind of step around this and go faster and faster. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was really the opportunity came not immediately, but a couple of months after everyone was allowed to go work from home. And it freed up a lot of the commute time. And it just gave me, you know, just a couple extra hours a day that I could throw at real estate. And that was, you know, that was one of the big, I guess, opportunities that I had that allowed me to jump on something. But even then, it took a couple of months after everyone was working from home and I had that extra time and I was applying it, because I realized there's this like two-step process when I'm going after something. And other people may find that there are more steps to it than this, but I find that there's a step of building desire, and there's a step after that of understanding or believing that you can get there. And when I say believing you can get there, I don't mean it kind of in like the more high, like, you know, frivolous way. I mean it more that you find a path that you have, you know, high confidence in, some strategy that you can employ, and you see it work once. And so you say, let me just make it work again. Let me try it again and again. And for us, those are the two steps. And early on, I really, you know, didn't have the desire to kind of give up my weekends and go work on that. And I also didn't have the path, and, you know, boosting either of these could have gotten me there. So we had that opportunity to kind of work, you know, work a couple extra hours a week because of the work from home policies. You know, we were able to build that desire until finally it kind of cracked. And I said, you know, I don't want to go back to the office ever. You know, once one day they might call back, and I never want to go back because I like being able to work from wherever it is. And we were working from Tahoe at the time. We worked from Hawaii for a month. And I liked that. I kind of got that taste of financial freedom, and that kicked off the desire, you know, circuit in my mind. And I said, I'm never going back to the way it was before. So, and they, you know, that really helped solve that first part, or help, you know, build that first part for me. And Abe, luckily I was living with Abe at the time, who's my business partner now. And for him, that shift was happening at the exact same time. And if we weren't living together, working, you know, kind of working on real estate together, at least brainstorming together, I don't know that it would have taken off the way that it did. Because we spent multiple days out, like, you know, sacrificed the weekend or the evenings, you know, many weeks in a row just to talk about this and try to build that desire.
Right. I love that. Let's unpack that for a little bit, because you did say some very, very key things that are, it's well known no matter what business you want to go into. First, it's dedication, right? Because if you would have given up, you wouldn't have gotten to where you're at. Sacrifices. At the beginning, you didn't want to give up your weekends. Finding a good business partner, somebody that goes along that journey with you, and finding your correct path. So these are all things that you have to do, no matter whether it's real estate or not. You got to get over those mental barriers. You got to make those sacrifices. And at the end of the day, it takes a lot of hard work. So, you know, if we say the butterfly and roses portion, oh, in the last 3 years, you know, you purchased 20 million, it's 45 million, but then you break it down and you're like, the first 18 months, I bought a couple $100,000 worth. It really didn't shift until you and Abraham really found your vibe, found your path. And people think it's always an overnight success thing, and it's absolutely not. Would you agree?
100%.
Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. How did you and Abraham meet? How did you guys find this partnership?
We went to middle school and high school together. I didn't know him very well back then. And he roomed with Alex, which is one of my partners that I bought those first triplexes with. So Alex is my best friend coming out of high school. We stayed good friends, you know, all the way through. And we bought those first couple properties together.
Nice, man. Nice. And then whose idea was it to target like industrial and office space? Usually I feel like majority of people are going after multifamily these days.
Yeah, it happened. That part happened over time. So I talked about three phases. I would call that first phase when we were, you know, the first 18 months when we were buying smaller multifamily triplexes and quadplexes out in the kind of the Midwest. The second phase, we went after multifamily in Reno and, you know, worked really hard to source as many of those as possible. And then, one day our broker, who we'd worked with, on a lot of multifamily in Reno, brought us a retail property. And we went over to his house. I remember, and I said, I'm going to just fire questions at you, because he was both a retail tenant and a retail owner. And so I'm going to fire a bunch of questions at you. I need to understand the mechanics of how this works. And so we just kind of did a crash course on retail property. And at the end, we shifted our underwriting model and looked at it and like, this is a slam dunk deal. Like there is almost no way for this to go south. So we're exiting that property, that very first one now. It's been about 16 months or so since we purchased. And that was kind of the entry in.
What's that exit looking like? I know a lot of people are wondering.
Yeah, we purchased at 1.5 million, and we're exiting between probably 3 and 3.2 right now. Wow.
You guys held it for a little over a year.
16 yeah, months.
About 16 months. Yeah.
Nice. 16 months. How many people are in on that deal?
We raise funds for all ours. As I said earlier, we syndicate these deals. So sure. That one, there's, we might have 6 investors or something like that.
Cool. That is awesome. So 25 years old, you've made huge moves. You're in a position now where you're financially free. So how do you stay motivated to keep the needle moving forward? And what's your plan for the future?
Yeah, great question. I've actually never had a problem with the staying motivated once you get going. I found early on the problem is to get the motivation. And it's kind of like you're trying to, you know, build a snowball so it starts to roll down the hill. But eventually it gets enough momentum where it's just rolling down the hill. And the problem actually becomes the opposite. Like, I need to slow this down, stop this, balance my life out a little bit. And, you know, be able to turn real estate off when I'm at dinner at 7 p.m. or whatever it may be. So, you know, I'll get there. But right now I'm actually working a little bit on that second half, which is trying to incorporate back the other parts of life, because for a year and a half, it became, or it was just obsession on real estate, obsession, obsession, obsession. And I mean, honestly, I loved it. It was a lot of fun. And when you're going early on, you have to generate that momentum. So you kind of have to go all in. It's way more worth it to go all in for a year than to kind of go halfway for a couple of years. You'll get a lot further in the first case.
Right. So that's amazing. Motivation typically for people like us, that's never hard, right? But there is still negative self-talk. There's still negative self-talk, well, external negative talk. So are you still dealing with that today? Can you tell the audience a little bit about the dark side of entrepreneurship and how to push through that wall?
Yeah, definitely. It's I would say on either side, the early stage and the late stage, it's lonely in both. And it's lonely early on because people don't really get what you're doing. They can't really relate to you. And you're obsessing about something, and it's the only thing that's on your mind. And you want to talk about it when you go and meet up with other people. And they're like, they don't get it. And so your main talking point, everything you're kind of obsessed with in your daily life, other people just don't understand. So they're constantly changing the subject towards other things. And I find that, like, once you have that success, that doesn't change that much. You're still, you know, your mind is still all in on this one business or this one idea or whatever it is. And other people from the outside don't get it. And I actually had a lot of trouble stepping back back to LA. So I went to school and here in LA, and I just came back about 6 months ago and re-meeting up with a lot of my friends from college and, you know, from LA, and finding that a lot of them from the outside, they don't get it. And they honestly don't want to talk about it, because part of it, maybe they don't want to acknowledge, you know, what's gone on, what they've been doing for the last 2 years, 3 years. And part of it's that they just have no interest in this topic that, you know, has consumed, you know, my brain for the last several years.
Love that.
Yeah. So it is a lonely journey all along the way. And I think your business partners can help you relieve a lot of that. Yeah. But I don't know that ever disappears as an entrepreneur.
Yeah. I love that you brought that up, because I constantly talk about the difference between your social circle and what becomes your sphere of influence, or the people that you could actually talk to, like your business partners.
Right.
I was telling a friend the other day, I think out of the last 30 new friends I've made, only one of them's because they're a cool guy and I want to hang out with them. The other 29, it's because we talked about investments, passive investments, syndications, stocks. You know, you are so right. People don't get it. And that is a huge barrier.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more with you, RJ and Ryan. It's just like as you're growing as a person, as you're growing as an entrepreneur or a real estate investor, like those people that are in your circle that don't understand and don't get it, and they're staying in the same spot, slowly you guys start to drift off, because like you were saying, they just don't get it. And then you guys aren't like talking about the same things anymore. You become obsessed with investing in real estate and they're more focused on other things. There's not a connection there.
For me, it was actually a cold turkey shift. I went from being the guy at the bars every single weekend to never picking up my phone to go out. But for other people, it's a slow shift. You know, it takes a long time to realize that there are negative Nancys in your group. And the biggest barrier I had was my best friend in the world told me I was dumb for pursuing real estate. He's like, oh, you're going to lose. And now he calls me for real estate advice. So I love talking about that.
Yeah, it's funny. I have a buddy from college, and he wanted to meet for lunch the other day. And after he wanted to meet for lunch to talk about real estate and like get advice from me. So after we get done eating, we walk out to like the parking lot. He's like, hey man, you want to see my new truck? I said, yeah, man, I'll see your new truck. So he got this truck, and it's like, he's like, dude, it's like a small mortgage payment. So he's probably paying, I don't know, $1,400 a month for this truck right now. And he has like a W-2 job and he wants to invest in real estate. And I still have like this small beat up car from Chicago that I'm still driving. He goes, He goes, man, why are you still driving that car if you're making all this money? And it's just like, I'm like, dude, it's a mindset shift like that you have to have. You have to be okay with saving some money for a little bit and not blowing all this money on a $1,400 truck payment. And you just got to shift your mindset, man. If you want to, exactly. You got to
assets before liabilities, rich dad, mm-hmm. poor dad.
Mm-hmm.
So that opens up a fun question. Ryan, what is a purchase you have splurged on since this newfound financial freedom?
I am trying to up my spending in certain categories, consciously, actively. Yeah. Those categories for me, you know, I originally wanted financial freedom and just dollars to spend, discretionary spend for travel, for relationships with other people. And so I'm actually trying to up my spend in those categories, and I'm trying to keep everything else probably low. So spending on myself, on food, on drinks, on, you know, my housing, my cars, things like that, I would like to keep low. I don't think those right. will, you know, add much value to my life, but spending on others and, or on travel, I think will return dividends.
Yeah.
Experiences. And that's a shift from a scarcity mindset, which a lot of people that, you know, grow up very or low income, medium income, we always have that. We want to save the cash underneath the bed type mindset, right? It's like, yeah. Oh, I get this money, let's keep saving it. But it's not how you do it. You got to keep investing, reinvesting, and invest in experiences in your health and your happiness, which material things don't do that. So last two important questions. One, how do we become partners in your deal? What's going on? Get me involved. I mean, we almost worked a deal together. I know that was a year or two ago. Obviously we have each other's contact info, but for the audience, people that love what you're doing, how can we get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can find our website at westeggrealestate.com. My email is ryan@westeggrealestate.com. So if you want to reach out either of those ways, we are constantly doing, we're usually in 5 or 6 escrows at any given point in time. And so those deals may not all work out, but if half of them do, that will be, you know, maybe 1 or 2 a month that we'll raise funds for and then go and pursue. So there's plenty of, go ahead. Yeah.
No, go ahead with your thought. Yeah,
no worries. There's plenty of, plenty of flow there. And RJ, right after this, let's hop on a call. We have we actually stopped our acquisition pipeline because we are training up. We hired a new CEO. We're training up some people, some virtual assistants, and other things on the escrow portion. And right now, that has become the bottleneck for us, is stabilizing what we have and running escrow due diligence, I guess, on the projects that we're purchasing right now. So we have other, you know, other stuff that we can put in the contract, especially if we have partners that can help offload that work. So.
Awesome. Definitely would be interested. What I almost stopped you on was I was just asking, is it a typical syndication model, preferred return, IRR expectations, exit multipliers, all that?
Yeah, good question. So we actually historically have only used really two models. One is very simple, just a preferred return with a cap, and that's it. But it's usually it's usually a 20% preferred return, something along those lines.
Wow.
The other, and those are deals where we just know we can add massive value to the margins. And so that value is going to be there. The other is a profit splitting model where we take no fees. We just get investors their money back and then we split 50-50 down the middle. So historically, these are the only two models we've really used. We find that aligns incentives the best with investors. We're not going to take anything until we've added that value. And first, you're going to get all of your capital back before we touch anything. So we've always kind of leaned on those two.
Sounds like an awesome model.
The profit splitting. Are you still in LA or did you move back to the Bay Area? You're in LA? Nice, man.
I'm in LA. Yes. Yeah.
All right. Good to know. All right. Well, Ryan, thanks for coming on the podcast today, man. This has been a great podcast and we're definitely looking forward to see the success that you and your partner have in the future, and definitely want to get you back on in probably the next year or so, see where you're at.
Exactly. Awesome. And thanks guys. Everybody for listening, tuning in. As always, like, share, subscribe, send us messages or notes, anything that you guys want to hear in the future. And we'll see you next week.
Yo, you made it to the end. You're one step closer to changing your mindset, discovering your true potential.
If you like what you heard, share our podcast and leave us a review. Send us a note. We'd love to hear from you.
Catch you next week.